You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of January 1st, 2013. All right, welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, tonight's incredibly unstructured because we didn't plan a lot show, we have John Gentile recording in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania. Is that right?
That's right, baby.
And Kira Wisniewski in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Kira.
Hi.
So just before we get started, of course, this being the Punk News Podcast, we want to let you know that if you want to email us, you can do so at podcast@punknews.org. If you want to find us on Facebook or Twitter, we are Punk News, and you can find us that way. If you want to find us on the web, we are, of course, punknews.org. And if any of the opinions that are going to be expressed on tonight's show are just those of us and not of punknews.org, the hive mind. So... yeah, we are going to basically talk about what our favorite music was of the last year. It's the first week of January right now. We skipped the podcast last week because everyone was holiday festing. So here we are. We've all posted our individual lists of best of, as we do every year. We have an overall site list that went up. We have a readers list that went up. So I guess we should talk a little bit about what kind of stuff happened in 2012. I guess the first thing to look at would be the staff, the overall Punk News staff picks of the year. This always is something that we have to re-explain because people don't understand how unmanaged Punk News is sometimes. And I say this as the managing editor, which makes it sound like I do absolutely nothing. And that is that... the staff best of list is basically determined by math. We have a spreadsheet of some sort that the person who is saddled with assembling this list has to deal with. And then that was the intrepid Joe Pallone this time. Joe basically took all of the lists that we had all made on our own, tallied up the EPs and the LPs and gave everything a weighted score and then added it all together. And then that's what became the best of list. And actually none of us see the list until it actually goes up, so it's always a little bit of a mystery to us what the number one album is going to be. So this year, the number one album as determined by math on behalf of the staff was On the Impossible Past by the Menzingers. It was actually my number one album of the year too. Kira, how'd that rank for you?
It was number two.
Any thoughts on the Menzingers or why they've come out on top, or you know,
I think that they're great. They definitely had some of my favorite live performances of this year. One of them I was fortunate enough to share with you, Mr. Adam White, at Pooza Fest, which was just a tremendous, tremendous show. I think the album is just really, really great. It's probably the album that I definitely listened to the most this year, even though it wasn't my number one, but it's... like 10 to 1 right now, it's in my car CD player because that's just pretty much where it's lived since I bought it at Soundgarden, because I bought the CD sometime this year. I bought it. But I think it's well deserved, appropriate, and unsurprising that it ended up on number one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it, and I'm just going to make sure I'm not making this up, it also ended up on the number one for the.
It did.
Here's list. It did. Now, the reader's list was kind of funny because the number two record on the reader's list is the one that we got the most shit for ignoring, which was Propagandhi's Failed States. I don't actually know if it really ranked anywhere amongst the staff. Definitely not in our overall best of. It might have ranked on a few people's individual lists, but yeah, that was the number two on behalf of the people. So the people were quite happy, I think, to see that in there.
I mean, the people are also happy to see NoFX in theirs.
You know what? I snuck NoFX's in mine. I actually kind of liked that record. But yeah, people were happy for that too. So, John, your number one album of the year here was...
Classics of Love.
Sorry, let me qualify that by saying your number one album that wasn't a Melvins record, which also ranked really highly on all of the respective lists. On the overall punk news list for the staff, it was
number two or three, I think.
Number three for the it was number five for the readers. So why Classics of Love?
Because the album's kicking. That's why. Honestly, like. It was Scott Heisel, who used to work for Punk News. I think he said, or maybe it was Brian Yancey, one of the two said, I wish all punk rock sounded like this all the time, and I agree. Honestly, it's to me what punk rock should be. I think I speak for a minority and an increasingly slimming minority of the Punk News readership in that we're just not into like these like hot water music bands and all these orgcore bands at all. I'm just not feeling them. And Classics of Love is hard, you know, the riffs are kicking, the vocals are like angry but not like pure screaming, and the lyrics are great. It's just Jesse Michaels, who used to be in Operation Ivy, as you guys all know, he's like 40 or 38 and he's just so angry on it, but not only is he angry, he's like so literate, and people are like, well, Propaganda's great because they're so literate, but you know what, Propaganda's like just a bunch of dudes like telling each other how smart they are, while Classics of Love, the lyrics are very inclusive. It's like he's speaking to a fundamental truth, I think, that most people hold, whereas Propaganda, he's like, oh, I'm so smart, you know? And also, I mean, the music is just slamming. It's like just 2 minute banging riff after 2 minutes banging riff. It's fast and it's hard, but it's not too hard. It's basically the perfect, I guess, connection between energy and fierceness. So I love it. It's great.
It's funny because during their set at Pooza Fest this year, which was really, really late. I want to say that they were almost late getting there. Like basically like their plane landed, they got to the venue, they played their show, and that was that. We were all, Akira, were you there for that one?
That was on Sunday night, so I had to leave.
You left? That sucks. Okay. By the time they went on, I was just dead exhausted at this point. But we... You know, and it didn't even feel like the venue they were in was all that full for some reason. But, you know, we got down and we're right in front of the stage. Mr. John
Flynn, right?
Flynn was there with me. And Sloan, one of our staff writers, was there. And I'm trying to remember who else from the Punk News universe was in the room then. But we were right down there in front of the stage, and they came on, and Jesse kind of starts going, and everyone just starts slamming around. But I'm standing right there in the middle of it, and I'm just kind of like jaw-dropping fanboy. I'm just like fixated and unmoving almost for the whole thing. And it was partly the part of my brain that was completely raised on Operation Ivy just turning to mush. But it was just completely surreal for me. I just kind of stood there like an idiot the whole time with my mouth open and was just like, oh my God. And then it was over. So yeah, that one ranks incredibly high for me too. I really enjoyed it. And you know what? I think I like that a lot better than any of, say, like the Kamen Rider stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I actually see you said you kind of like Kamen Rider more so because of its pedigree than that its actual delivery. I like Kamen Rider a lot, especially the first record, but I agree 100%. Classics of Love is better than Kamen Rider. And I think Classics of Love is even better than Operation Ivy, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think Classics of Love is better than Kamen Rider. And I think Classics of Love is even better than Operation Ivy. I think the Classic of Love self-titled LP is one of the greatest punk rock records ever made. I'm talking top 25 records, for real.
Wow. That's a pretty grand statement there.
I mean, it's perfect. It's only like 24 minutes, and it's just like, bam, 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 hit after hit. And it's like, it's just so awesome. And you said you saw Jesse Michaels live. I've seen Classics of Love 9 times. Because I just moved back from the Bay Area. And what's really interesting about Jesse Michaels is that he's got like 3 different styles of performances that he does. And I don't know what meters it is. Sometimes he'll just stand like right in the center of the stage, not moving, with his hands clasped together. And his body will just like vibrate like he's being like shot up with electricity. Another time I saw him, it was at bottom of the hill. In San Francisco. No, it was the Parkside in San Francisco. As he was just like lashing himself around, like just jumping in the air, getting down, whipping his arms around. It was awesome. And another time I saw him in Santa Cruz, which is kind of like in between the two, he kind of did like a Bruce Luce from a Flipper kind of thing, where he like stumbled around the stage. Like, I mean, he wasn't drunk, obviously, but kind of like that like body position where you take, where you're like really loose and like on something. He wasn't, but like you take that like posture, you know, like a certain looseness to your body. So he's a phenomenal live performer. You should check him out if you ever get the chance. Adam, what, you know what I'm talking about, but Kira, you don't, because you left early, you know, so.
That was a long drive from when I was living in D.C.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the stuff that you know, we kind of individually were really into this year. I mean, a lot of people were criticizing, I think, the overall Punk News list for being, I don't know, they were saying it was a little bit too, there wasn't enough variation that they felt between a lot of the individual lists, or at least that was the perception that they had. But, you know, when Joe came back to counter that, you know, there were something like 160 albums that were kind of spread between the general Punk News audience. So everyone's kind of into their own little thing. And I think that's kind of the interesting bit of this conversation. So I'm curious to hear about some of that. Joe, you want to, Joe, John, wow, that was weird. I'm reading too many things at the same time. John,
that's actually my first name.
Oh, well then whatever.
it's true. His name is Joseph.
Okay. Whoever you are, you know, What in particular were you into? You can play a song for us, you know, show the people here one of the things here that was kind of one of the items that you were bringing to the table.
I'll tell you, is on my top list, I did my very favorite LPs and my very favorite EPs. People are saying, oh, this list is the same for everybody, but it's entirely different. My very favorite EP, which wasn't on anybody else's list, was Mischief Brew's new EP called A Rhapsody for Knives, and this is the title track off that, the track is called Maybe I'll Catch Fire, and it is kicking.
Down at the station, impatiently waiting to be thrown in. Show you disorder, call a cop by his name. Hey you, watch me catch fire. Hey you, watch me catch fire. Gas made you blind. Packed into boxes and shipped to a dungeon. Faces. report. With jails overspilling, you're gonna spend millions fighting this war.
So we're back. That was Mischief Brew from their EP. It was the number one on John's list. I had kind of the same feeling for me on my EPs list. Mine ended up being a lot of this kind of like Ontario Canadian stuff that I tend to listen to. My number one for the year was a band from Dundas, Ontario called The Dirty Nil, and they had a 7-inch that just came out called Little Metal Baby Fist, and I played the title track from it on the show a few weeks ago, so I don't want to go too crazy with replaying that band over and over and over on the podcast, although I'm really super tempted to. But, you know, I encourage our listeners to go look up The Dirty Nil and check their stuff out, because it's one of my favorite live performances of the year, and I've seen them, God, it feels like 6 or 7 times this year at various shows in the area. But it's just the kind of thing where they're a 3-piece, they get up on stage, one of them has their bass player has a crazy mustache, I don't know why that's relevant, but it is. They get up on stage, and it's very much, I think, like what you were describing with Jesse Michaels, or it's just like, they're just playing their ass off the whole show. These guys are having a ton of fun with it too. Like, it's like huge smiles on the singer's face as he's just kind of going. I love watching them more than anything. So, I absolutely totally recommend the 7-inch that they had out, or, you know, anything else that they had come out. So, you know, if you guys can go check that out, check that out. If we're talking about EPs also, we got to talk about that Restorations AB thing, because that seemed to, you know, get a lot of people's attention. Kira, you had that one, right?
Yeah, well, I didn't make an EP list, so it's not on my actual list, although I wrote the review of it on the Punk News. It's really great. I mean, I love that band. I think that you love them too, Adam. I don't think that you love them, John Gentile, but that's okay.
Me and the Ants just saw them at a Secret House show opening for Painted Black last week.
Oh, look at you. So did you love them? Or did you change your mind? Right? Do you want to put their EP on your end list now?
Honestly, I didn't change my mind. I enjoyed the set, but for me, they're no classics of love.
All right. Fair. They are quite different from classics of love. I would agree with that. Sorry, I have a little bit of a cold, so I'm sorry. I sound a little disgusting. But yeah, that Restorations EP was, I think it was perfect. It was it's only 2 tracks, so just like, you know, a little 7-inch, 2 sides, 1 song on each side. But I actually just loved, so it's called AB, so side A, side B, which, okay. But side B is just like one of my favorite songs of the year, for sure. It sounds so cliched, but I really just think, like, the first, like, adjective that comes to mind is that song just soars. Like, it's so, I just don't even have the vocabulary to really accurately articulate how great it is. But we should listen to it right now in, like, all, like, 5-6 minutes of its glory. So here's Restorations with B.
We'll be right back.
All right, that was Restorations with B. You know what? Speaking of Restorations, because one of the bands that always comes up when we're discussing them, especially between Punk News alumni Justin August and his crowd and me, and really even the Restorations guys themselves, is that we're all huge fans of the Constantines, which were an Ontario band that's no longer around these days. And really, Restorations very much carries the torch of the kind of sound that the Constantines had grown into over the years. They were a band that when they started out, they were really much playing... The cliche when the Cons started was that their stuff sounded a lot like if you had like Joe Strummer fronting Fugazi. They had that kind of thing going, where you had this kind of like gruff working man's punk thing on the one hand, and on the other hand you had this angular, almost mathy at times, indie rock undertones to it. And so that was the Cons. The Cons are really my favorite band ever. I don't want to talk too much about them, but I do want to seg from talking about Restorations into talking about a band that was on my top 20 list, and it was number 3, I think, on my top 20 list, which is a band called Baby Eagle and the Proud Mothers. Baby Eagle is the current project of Constantine's guitarist Steve Lamke. And if you ever listen to the Cons, they were a band where he was always the more polarizing of the vocalist. Their main vocalist, Brian Webb, he was the guy that always got the strummer comparisons. Everyone loves Bry Webb. He's easy to love. He's got, you know, just a really, really easy to connect to voice. You know, a little bit of Strummer, a little bit of Springsteen going on with him. But Steve has a lot harder to grasp thing going. He's got this often whispered, almost warbling voice. It's a super stark contrast to the strength of Brian's. So his solo stuff has always been really interesting because he was always kind of the odd man out when it came to, you know, Cons vocalists, but they've really gotten good. So his current band is the Proud Mothers. Baby Eagle is the name of his solo project. The band that he recorded with is basically like a bunch of guys from all of my favorite bands together. He's got Constantine's Will Kidman playing on the record. Attack and Black's Ian Kehoe and Spencer Burton are playing on it. Peterborough, Ontario, alt country. A singer-songwriter Nick Ferrio is playing on it, and it goes down this moment where, you know, at sometimes it's really, really punk rock, at sometimes it goes clearly into this kind of like Rust Never Sleeps, Neil Young territory. So their record Bone Soldiers was my number 3. We're gonna play a little bit of a lower key song from the record called Brave Women now. So this is my segment from Restorations into Baby Eagle. So this is going to be Brave Women from Baby Eagle and the Proud Mothers from the record Bone Soldiers. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. So let's talk about a few of the other things that we liked this year. Kira, I guess you won't let us get out of this show without talking about the Souls.
Yay! the Bouncing Souls are my favorite, and I like to talk about them every possible time I can. I think kind of how, like, John Gentile likes to talk about the Melvins. And I recently went to one of their Home for the Holiday shows in Asbury Park. I try to go to at least one of those shows every year. For those of you not familiar, for the past now 6 years, the Bouncing Souls do 4 shows between Christmas and New Year's in their hometown of Asbury Park. And it's just delightful, completely, completely delightful. And so they always do, like, fun little ways to do their set list, like... 1 year they were doing whole albums. Another year they had this massive bingo, like one of those big balls that you put all the little balls in and you spin it around. A bingo ball? I don't really know what that's called. And they had all the song titles on it, and that's how they made their set list. And this year they had some of their friends make their set list. So the night that I went, Brian Fallon actually made their set list, and it was perfect, guys. It was really perfect. It went, like, had a really nice flow to it. Like, there would be, like, a slower jam, like Holiday Cocktail Lounge, and then it would go into, like, a more, you know, upbeat jam, like Kid. And it was great. It was really great. And I know that a lot of people, a lot of our readers are, like, throwing all sorts of shade about Comet being in a lot of these year-end lists because they're like, Comet, it's terrible. I mean, all right, so real talk. It's not How I Spent My Summer Vacation. It's not Hopeless Romantic. But it's the Bouncing Souls, y'all. It's the Souls. So, of course, they're going to be on our year-end list because there's just something that's just so endearing and delightful about them that, you know, it's just like, just will persevere forever and ever and ever. Anyway, so I want to play a song that you've probably heard, but, you know, you want to hear it again right now. I know you do. So here's a Coin Toss Girl by the Bouncing Souls off of their 2012 release, Comet.
She's so cold to me, always in trouble, never know why. She has two sides, changes her mind. I just wanna get off this ride. Step aside, let the storm pass me by. When it's good, it's great. And we lay side by side. She curls up in my arms. Everything. It's alright. Don't wanna kill these good vibes. Still, it happens all the time. There's no reason why. Caught it in the air. Everything's fair. I loved her like a fool. What can I do? My coin toss girl. No matter what I try, I get denied. It happens all the time. It's a roller coaster ride. Thrills and spills so sky high. I'm so glad she's mine. What can I do? What can I do? My coin toss girl.
Okay, that was Coin Toss Girl from the Bouncing Souls from Comet. Comet ended up as number, what is it here? Number 5 on Mrs. Kira Wisniewski's picks. It was number 19 on the Punk News staff's list, and it was number 12 on the readers' list, which is interesting because it's higher than the staff list, and we got all the shit for including it. So, huh, there you go. You fucking. So, John, you're probably just chomping at the bit. You want to talk about the Melvins?
Yeah, man, I'll tell you. I think 2012 has been the best year for Melvins fans ever. Melvins are a great band to be in if you're like really into the band because they're very collectible and they do a lot of interesting things. They don't really just put out an album. They put out an album with a purpose. This year they put out 7 releases. I think the top 3 for me was Freak Puke, which is original Melvin, Buzz Osborne, almost original Melvin, Dale Crover, and Trevor Dunn on acoustic bass. So it's 3 of them just doing this really neat record called Freak Puke, which is heavy, but also sort of like jazz, which was really cool. They also put out an EP this year called The Bulls and the Bees, which is the 4-piece Melvin, which is Buzz Osborne, Dale Crover, Jared Warren, and Cody Willis. So that's 2 drummers. And I think it's probably the best EP they've ever done, and maybe the best thing they've ever done. The Bulls and the Bees was fantastic. And they gave it away for free through Scion, which was pretty cool. And they also put out a record called Melvin's 1983, which is Dale Crover, Buzz Osborne, and their original bass player, whose name escapes me right now. He's only in the band for like a couple of months. And so that was a really neat record, too, because it was basically asked, what if the original Melvins never broke up? And that was a cool record. So right now I'm going to play, I think, probably my favorite track from Freak Puke, which is The Melvins Light, which is Osborne, Crover, and Trevor Dunn on acoustic bass, you know, like they have in jazz clubs, a big stand-up acoustic bass. And this is Leon versus The Revolution.
Okay, that was the Melvins. So if we're letting John indulge his idiosyncrasies here, I'm gonna do some of mine. So as is the stereotype that I just let fester and grow. I'm the guy that tends to have all this random Canadian stuff on the list that the whole rest of the site and readership doesn't give a shit about.
But I love it. I love that you do it, I must say. I don't have a fucking clue who these bands are that you talk about, but I really love it.
You know, it's partly me trying to grind that axe. It's funny because after I posted my list, I got a comment almost immediately on Facebook from Mr. Toby Jag of Red Scare saying like, oh, I wonder how much of it's Canadian or something like that. You know what? Fuck you, Toby. But anyways, let's play some random Canadian music that only Adam cares about because I can. There's a band out of BC called Lady Hawk. It's Lady Hawk with no E. There is another band that has an E that is also called Lady Hawk, but I don't know who they are, so I don't care. They've been away for, I'm going to say 4 or 5 years at this point, but they came back with their third proper LP recently. It's called No Can Do. It was on Triple Crown Recordings. They're a band that to me, and I always describe them this way, and it still doesn't even make a ton of sense to me, is they're my Sunday morning hangover band. They're the band where, you know, I have memories for some reason, I don't even know if this is real, of kind of like sitting there in the front window of my house, you know, the night after a show. I'm not going anywhere, but I'm going to sit here and drink coffee and listen to music all morning. But Lady Hawk is the kind of band that I can just zone out and listen to. They kind of alternate on this record between, you know, some fuzzy kind of psychedelic stuff, you know, and a bunch of stuff. It's a little bit more punk rock than even their past few releases. So this is a song called, what am I playing for you? It's called You Read My Mind. It is from Lady Hawk's new record. It was number 7 or 6 or something like that, 8 on my list. So yeah, here's something you probably haven't heard, unless you're Canadian. This is Lady Hawk, and You Read My Mind. Yeah, a little softer, ever middle, ever since I was little. Yeah, I'm growing softer all the time, getting out of my mind. But is that okay, we're back. That was a song from Lady Hawk. Kira, why don't you jump in and play us something here? What were you listening to this year?
So my number one, let's just talk about my number one. Japan Droids, Celebration Rock. Canadians, Adam, Canadians.
They're from BC?
Yeah, they're from BC. I don't know where, but that's, you know, British Columbia somewhere. I just love this album so much. I saw them actually this past month, in December with Mr. John Gentile and Mr. Brian Yancey in Philadelphia, and it was great. It was after we turned in our year-end list, though, so that's why it's not on John's list, because I know that concert just swayed him.
It's true. I would have done my top five Japan Droids releases instead of my top five Melvins releases for the year.
See, there you go. There you go. You know, and I was talking about some people to, I don't even remember. I was talking about this on New Year's Eve with somebody about how much I love this album. And they were saying how, they don't think that it has any, like, longevity, though. That, like, nobody's gonna listen to this album in 10 years. And that may or may not be true. But this is an album that I love right now. And so that's why it's my number one. It's every song on it, I get real, real excited about it. Like, no matter, like, what situation I'm in. Like, I mentioned this in my little write-up. Like, if I'm in my living room, if I'm in my car, like, anywhere. I'm just real excited to hear it and to sing along. I've read somewhere this past year in, like, an interview or something about how they wrote the album. And I'm kind of paraphrasing it because I don't remember the quote verbatim, that they kind of wrote it as like an album that you would want to sing along with, that you would just want to shout along the lyrics with the band. And I think that they squarely achieved that. And I'm real, real pumped on it. So let's play a song. Let's play Younger Us by Japan Droids off of their album Celebration Rock on Polyvinyl Records.
Never gonna end.
Okay, we're back. That was Japandroids. We'll back off on some of the Canadian stuff here. John, can you? I think you need to bring us back to earth here. You know, what do you got
from the? Let's go old school, baby. Yeah. You know, it's kind of sad. Not a whole lot of people know, but Jello Biafra has had a new band for about 4 years now. It's called Jello Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine. And I saw their debut when they played with the Melvins at Jello's 50th birthday. So. You know, I got some real punk rock cred that way. At any rate, they put out an EP this year. The EP was called Shockupy. It was basically Jello Biafra's love letter to the Occupy movement. There's a Canadian connection there because the third track is Jello Biafra and Joey Keithley of DOA singing a new DOA song together called We Occupy, which is pretty cool. The Jello Biafra mix, which was different than the DOA mix, was interesting because the Jello Biafra mix was almost like a ska song. So it's like Jello Biafra doing a ska tune with Joey from DOA, which was pretty cool. But my favorite track on that album is called Brock Star Oh Bummer, which Jello's got a lot of flack for. A fair amount of flack because people are like, well, Jello, you should be criticizing the president. You know, he's much better than the previous president. And I guess I'm confounded by that because it's like you expect Jello Biafra to not criticize the president no matter who he is. I mean, that's like Jello Biafra's job is no matter how far left the president is, Jello Biafra is there to pull him even further, or at least to criticize him from a further, you know, leftist stance, which I love. And I got to say, this is just my personal Jello Biafra anecdote, is, Jello Biafra probably has made a fair amount of money, at least to the Dead Kennedys, but those records still sell, right? So at the Alternative Tentacles 30th or 35th anniversary show, I saw Jello Biafra drive up right before the show. And, you know, Jello, I mean, he's probably not a billionaire, but he's probably made some bank. Do you know what he was driving?
What was he driving?
He was driving this beat-ass old Jetta from, like, 1985 that was convertible, but, like, the top had been, like, duct-taped down because it was, like, so old. So I got to say, man, Jello Biafra walks the walk. All these other guys talk a game, but Jello Biafra walks the walk. And not only that is all alternative Tentacles shirts, that's Jello Biafra's record label, are made in the USA, like not sweatshops. So I got to say, I've got so much respect for Jello. So if you mess with Jello, then you're messing with me. That's all I'm saying, punk news. Anyways, this is one of my favorite tracks from the new Jello Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine. Regardless of your political stance, the song is a jam, and it's called Barack Star Oh Bummer.
Barack Star Oh Bummer, out of nowhere to save the day. What a package, marketing, hope and change. Never seen so much excitement and faith since MLK. Where have I heard this before? 1992! Called himself the man from hope. A new beginning was his tune. Signed our sovereignty over to Wall Street. He should have been impeached for treason! Barack Star Oh Bummer turned out to be more like Rodney King. Puppy dog beaten up again and again. Instead of fighting, begging on his feet for common ground. Can't we get along? Who would have guessed? A hero on the stage had no spine at all to lead in any way. Substitute teacher who can't control the class. Or is that part of me? A brilliant speech, light up my TV. I wish he was that guy. So much drama thrown away. I can't help but say, what does he want from life? What does he want from life? Barack Star Oh Bummer, Bushness as usual again. Great enabler for the biggest heist of all time. It's no wonder they put so much money in that coin slot on his head. More people lose their jobs, more people lose their homes. What does he do but help the banksters reap the star? Bush's wars go on, same old war on drugs. War criminal to torture, he licks them off. In love with fracking and filthy oil sands. Don't even care if the pollution one day kills his kids. Spying on us more than ever before. What are we careless? Or cause they know we're bad to blow?
But what does he see? What does he want from life? What does he want from life? What do you want from life?
Let us down, oh, did we let ourselves down? Drink your latte, oh, praying chief will do the work while we sit home reminiscing about our lost youth on Facebook.
All right, we're back. That was the Jello Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine. I have no idea how we're doing for time given this weird episode structure that we've come up with for tonight. So let's, you know, we'll see what else we got here. Want to wrap it up? Do you want to play more songs?
Yeah, I feel like we played a lot of music.
Yeah, I guess when you actually insert the music into this show, it's going to be pretty long. So
that restoration song alone is 6 minutes.
Oh, it's your fault. Okay. I suppose we should do that. Okay, so yeah, we'll be back next week with a probably more regular podcast. But yeah, I'm not even really sure. One of you guys has to go out there and create some news over the next week, so we have something to talk about. This is always kind of the doldrums of
good
the year.
News,
in terms
good
of,
news.
Yeah, good news.
Nobody called any tragedies. Good news. Go out there and do some good news.
Okay. We're not encouraging you to go like do anything bad. If you are looking for news, by all means go to punknews.org. Over the last few weeks, a few things that came up. Adam Willard is going to play the Australian shows with Against Me after Jay Weinberg left the band. Henry Rollins posted some or a video where he was talking, or was it a video or a thing? I don't know.
No,
Henry
Rollins, written interview.
An interview, there you go, where he talks about writing. He actually says he stopped thinking lyrically, so that's kind of cool. You can go see that. Our pals in Bomb the Music Industry released what may be their last track, which is a song called Big Kisses. There are some tour dates from Green Day. If you hate yourself, you can go see those. John Rice from Rocket from the Crypt talked about their reunion. He didn't really say much, but hey, it's Rocket from the Crypt in the news, so you know, you kind of want to get on that. So yeah, there's that. There's more. That's kind of some of the stuff that's happened. We're expecting to have more updates on some of those stuff. Hopefully, the Rocket from the Crypt stuff by the next time we talk to you. So yeah, I'm Adam White. We've got Kira and John on the show. I think we are done. And it was an all right year, I guess. We'll have to see what happens now.
Happy New Year, everyone!
Woo!